Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 21st. Pfluger says Midland resilient, renewed. Congressman says region ready to solve geopolitical issues with abundance of oil. The story was written by Mella McEwen. As the world watches Russia's attacks on Ukraine and families around the globe struggle with rising costs for everything from energy to food, there is a solution. That solution lies underneath the surface of the Permian Basin, said Representative August Pfluger. And the audience gathered at the Horseshoe to hear the San Angelo Republican speak is contributing to providing that solution. That solution, he said, is the abundance of oil and natural gas present in the Permian Basin. That abundance of oil and gas, which has already saved American households $10,000 a year since the shale revolution, can help lower energy prices and thus the prices of just about every other product, he said. Quote, "This is the most important region poised to solve the geopolitical issues confronting the world," said Pfluger, who represents the 11th District, a 29-county swath of West Texas that includes Midland, Odessa, San Angelo, and much of the Permian Basin. Asked to speak at the Midland Chamber of Commerce's annual State of Midland luncheon, Pfluger declared the State of Midland resilient, renewed, and ready. He was speaking, he pointed out, on the second anniversary of oil prices going negative for the first time ever. Midland weathered that downturn, caused by oil demand destruction from the COVID-19 pandemic and an oil price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and has now put 100 more drilling rigs back to work and grown Permian output to 5.1 million barrels a day. 2 years to the day that oil prices fell to a negative $38 a barrel, he said Midland is renewed and has become a geopolitical tool the U.S. must use now amid aggression by Russia and China and emerging concerns about other nations like Iran and North Korea. The State of Midland is ready, he said, to address those challenges, as well as challenges, he said, are coming from the nation's capital. Quote, "We are poised to provide energy security not just for the U.S., but for our partners and allies," Pfluger said. "We lead the nation in affordable, reliable, secure, clean energy. Midland has changed the political landscape. If we are serious about reducing emissions, we should embrace what the industry is doing here," end quote. Over the last decade, he said Permian Basin production has quadrupled, but methane intensity has fallen 50% over that same time. The U.S., he said, has reduced emissions more than the next 12 emissions-reducing nations combined because steps the Permian Basin energy industry has taken to reduce emissions. President Biden should have called Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton instead of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to see more supplies of crude and natural gas to help lower energy costs, Pfluger said. That is why he introduced the Midland Over Moscow Act, which would require the Biden administration to develop an energy strategy to counter Russia and strengthen U.S. energy security, impose sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, and expand markets for U.S. energy, specifically liquefied natural gas. It is not just a phrase, he said. Quote, "We need to fuel the world with U.S. energy, not Russian energy," Pfluger declared. He called on the administration to unleash the domestic energy industry by again issuing permits to drill on federal lands and for new pipelines and for new facilities to export more U.S. crude and natural gas to Europe and Asia. Energy, he said, has lifted more than 1 billion people out of poverty around the world, yet 600 million remain without electricity. Quote, "We need to stand at the side of the industry that has lifted 1 billion people out of poverty, that provides energy and national security," Pfluger said. "If," he continued, "we're serious about ending energy poverty and promoting prosperity, we must embrace the Permian Basin's oil and gas resources." End quote. MISD plan eyes work to existing facilities. Committee seeks at least $50 million for long-range projects. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The long-range facilities plan presented to the Midland ISD Board Tuesday was more than a wish list of new buildings. Far from it. In fact, the number one ranked recommended capital project wasn't a new high school or elementary school, but tens of million dollars for general campus improvements, specifically a minimum of $50 million as identified by the Facilities Assessment and Operations Team. Midland ISD reported in the plan that there is $266 million in facilities improvements from roofs to mechanical electrical plumbing. The list includes $14.9 million for accessibility or code, $50.8 million for site improvements, including parking lots and sidewalks, $16.6 million for exterior projects, $116 million for interior projects, $55 million for MEP, $11.4 million for roofs. Midland ISD noted in the report that there are only three campuses left with roofs over 8 years old. Kelly Spencer, chief of administrative services for the district, told the reporter Telegram on Wednesday the dollar amounts are from a facilities assessment that took place in 2020-2021. She mentioned that Midland ISD's average building is 53 years old and that the district operated in a reactive state when it came to maintenance when she arrived at the district. Spencer said Tuesday that after she arrived that she began to identify areas that could be addressed within our existing budget. Major projects include $2.2 million in comprehensive LED lighting retrofit, interior and exterior, 34,477 fixtures, 103,000 lamps. In addition to addressing lighting deficiencies identified in the report, this project is anticipated to reduce energy costs by approximately $400,000 a year. $15 million HVAC project, approved but in development. She noted that an elementary reverse osmosis project was planned prior to her arrival. That project, she said, has been completed, and the district is working through a secondary project that will impact each secondary campus. Quote, "We are fixing things when they are broken and not being proactive with their maintenance," she said. "We are working through that so things don't break." End quote. She said the Long Range Facilities Committee made a statement about taking care of what's already in place by selecting funds for general campus improvements as its top priority. Quote, "From the very beginning, there were concerns within the group that there were facilities that we needed to take care of," Spencer said. Spencer added, "Now that the plan has been turned over to the board, the process will include determining what needed to be done as far as career and technical education. A different committee will discuss whether a standalone CTE center is needed to meet the vocational needs of MISD students." Quote, "If a CTE center is not deemed to be necessary at this time, consideration should be given to designing the two new high schools for approximately 4,000 students each to meet the projected student enrollments through the year 2032, the report states. Once a decision is made concerning CTE, then a committee will convene to discuss possible uses for Midland High School. Considerations in the plan include turning MHS into a specialty campus or campus of choice like a CTE center or middle school fine arts academy, a professional development center, an early childhood center, family service center, or selling the property. At that point, the school board would then be able to select a bond committee, if it chooses, to determine how much and when a bond election is needed. Children's Museum members get sneak peek before opening. Museum members got first look at the Freda Turner Durham Children's Museum on Wednesday at the Museum of the Southwest. The museum is set to open to the public on May 1st after being renovated. The revamped 8,000-square-foot building will allow expansion of the museum's high-demand arts activities and scheduled art education programs. The museum will focus on evolving programs and educational equipment and offer facilities and expertise in arts education for free or at low cost to other nonprofits and social services agencies. Renovations include lower sensory gallery, a calming environment for all ages, particularly guests with special needs. Maker space, a drop-in space with a staff-facilitated project. Painting zone, paint on transparent walls, clean and repeat. Toddler zone, a space where ages 0 to 3 years can safely explore and play. Free play zone, experiment with foam blocks, ball paths, and other artistic and mechanical objects on the floor and walls. The hub, a space where adults can recharge and chat. Sea wall, enjoy and learn about aquatic life forms ordinarily found hundreds or thousands of miles from West Texas. Interactive gallery, flexible space serving as a project studio or hosting traveling interactive exhibitions. Sound garden, create music by tapping, manipulating, and moving a collection of interactive sculptures. Open concept, improvements allow for new courses and programs, such as kindergarten readiness, summer camps, event rentals, and adult art classes.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday. Dental practice opens in Northwest Midland. Dr. Jonathan Coulon and Dr. Ryan Coulon's long-held vision of service to community through whole health dentistry was realized this month with the opening of Coulon Dental's Medical Arts Center at Holiday Hill. The Medical Arts Center at Holiday Hill is a two-story, 31,000-square-foot Class A medical office building at the intersection of Holiday Hill Road and Briarwood Avenue. The Coulons host their multi-specialty dental practice on the second floor, with the first floor being committed to housing other medical specialties. While Suite 100 is leased, Suites 110 and 120 have available medical office space for lease at 4,528 square feet and 4,217 square feet, respectively. Ryan Coulon expressed his deep commitment to God and community while stressing that he and Jonathan Coulon are honored to be able to serve Midland and the surrounding areas through dentistry. When you serve, you see life as a whole, Ryan Coulon said. Fixing and helping may be the work of the ego, but service is the work of the soul. A design feature utilized through the Coulon Dental office spaces was the use of local artistry. We will feature galleries of local artist works on the walls, with the entirety of sale proceeds going directly to the artist. Most people in U.S. back masks for travel. By Dave Kolpak, Associated Press. Fargo, North Dakota. A majority of people in the United States continue to support a mask requirement for people traveling on airlines and other shared transportation, a poll finds. A ruling by a federal judge has put the government's transportation mask mandate on hold. The poll by the Associated Press, NORC, Center for Public Affairs Research, finds that despite opposition to that requirement that included verbal abuse and physical violence against flight attendants, 56% of those surveyed favor requiring people on planes, trains, and public transportation to wear masks, compared with 24% opposed and 20% who say they are neither in favor nor opposed. Interviews for the poll were conducted last Thursday to Monday, shortly before a federal judge in Florida struck down the national mask mandate on airplanes and mass transit. Airlines and airports immediately scrapped their requirements that passengers wear face coverings. The Transportation Security Administration stopped enforcing the mask requirement, and the Justice Department announced on Tuesday that it will not appeal the ruling unless the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention determines it's still necessary. The CDC said Wednesday that it continues to recommend that people wear masks in all indoor public transportation settings and was assessing the need for a mask requirement in those settings. The poll shows a wide partisan divide on the issue. Among Democrats, 80% favor and just 5% oppose the requirement. Among Republicans, 45% are opposed, compared with 33% in favor, with 22% saying neither. Vicki Pettis, who recently moved from Frankfort, Kentucky, to Clearwater, Florida, to be near her grandchildren, said she enjoys the view of Old Tampa Bay, but doesn't like the very lackadaisical attitude by Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, about masking. She said she will continue to wear her mask to protect against the coronavirus, including around her 55 and older home community and on the plane when she travels to Kentucky in a few weeks. Especially in a plane where that air is recirculating, said Pettis, 71, an independent who leans toward the Democratic Party. I think people are really dumb not to wear their mask, but hey, that's their decision, and if they want to get sick, that's fine. I'm not going to. But Christy Lee, who works in sales in South Florida, can't wait to fly mask-free the next time she travels next month. I really wish I was on a plane when they made that announcement, said Lee, 47. I would have been dancing up and down the aisle. The continued public support overall for mandating masks on transportation comes even as worries about COVID-19 are among their lowest points of the past 2 years. Just 20% now say they are very or extremely worried that they or a family member will be infected. That's down slightly since 25% said the same just a month ago and from 36% in December and January, as the Omicron variant was raging. Another 33% now say they are somewhat worried, while 48% say they're not worried at all. Count Betty Harp of Litchfield, Kentucky, as among the very worried, and not because she's turning 84 next month. She said she takes care of her large house and yard by herself, does a lot of canning, and is in fantastic health for my age. But she's lost a lot of friends and family to the virus, which has killed nearly 1 million people in the United States. I know COVID is still here, it's still around, said Harp, who described herself as a Republican-leaning independent. I think we should all be wearing masks for a little while longer. In another AP-NORC poll conducted last month, 44% of those surveyed still said they were often or always wearing face masks outside their homes, although that was down significantly from 65% who said that at the beginning of the year. The latest poll also shows about half the people favor requiring masks for workers who interact with the public, compared with about 3 in 10 opposed. Support is similar for requiring people at crowded public events, such as concerts, sporting events, and movies, to wear masks. On these, too, there are significant partisan divides. 72% of Democrats favor requiring people attending crowded public events to wear masks, while among Republicans, 25% are in favor and 49% are opposed. The numbers are similar for requiring masks for public-facing workers. Lee, who said she doesn't do politics, wondered aloud why people are complaining about the judge's ruling and said nobody is stopping anyone from wearing masks if they want to. "We all have our beliefs and obviously different views," said Lee, who is unvaccinated. "Mine are definitely different from the people who are angry and upset." Employed people are divided on whether those working in person at their own workplaces should be required to wear masks. 34% say they're in favor of that requirement, 33% are opposed, and 33% are neither in favor nor opposed. Among workers who are Democrats, 48% are in favor and 18% are opposed. Among workers who are Republicans, 53% are opposed and 18% are in favor. Mike Osterholm, director of the University of Minnesota's Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, said messaging over the mask mandate would have been more effective if it required N95 or KN95 respirators, which are more effective at preventing transmission of the virus. "But you have actually created a real challenge with yourself, with the public, who are now being selective, if not outright angry about these mandates," said Osterholm, who added that he will continue to wear his N95 mask on planes. Longtime Artist's Work on Display at Museum by J.C. Lewis. Don Parks first picked up a paintbrush in 1962 in Gaston Hall at Texas Tech. Now, 60 years later, a retrospective exhibit of his work is on view at the Museum of the Southwest until May 1st. He started his art journey painting with watercolor, but switched to oil in 1985 because he realized watercolor would never stay wet in West Texas and his paper would never dry in the hill country. "I started as an agricultural economics major at Texas Tech," Parks said. "I was studying one night and I saw some art books in the stacks in the library behind me and bought some paint the next day, then painted in the dorm that weekend." He said he's always had an interest in art. Parks and his wife, Minda, grew up in Seymour, about 100 miles north of Abilene. "I don't think there are any artists in Seymour," he said. "I had no background in art. I grew up on a farm, however, and worked a lot with my hands with tooling leather." He added that tractor time was always a good time to study nature on the farm. After college and military service, he worked as a farm and ranch management specialist for Texas A&M. While in the Air Force, a professionally trained illustrator got him seriously thinking about pursuing art, he said. However, the couple was drawn to move back to West Texas, and Parks continued his career in banking for 28 years until he received a sign from God. "One night I said, 'God, I really need an answer for this,'" he said. "Then I felt bad because I was sounding demanding. One of our pastors at Stonegate knocked on the studio door at 9:30 at night, which the studio at that time was in the house. I thought, who in the world would be here? He stuck his head in, and it was now our mayor, Patrick Payton, and said he wanted me to work part-time at the church as an administrator and that I could paint the other half of the time. That happened in 2004. Then he worked at the Stonegate for 2.5 years before deciding to paint full-time in 2006. "I'm drawn to painting landscapes because they are God's creation," he said. "I think there is nothing more beautiful than that. You look real close and study. Eventually, you start realizing the limits of paint because the light outside is hundreds of times brighter than anything in a tube. So there are little gimmicks that painters try to figure out how to make the image look more lifelike instead of a piece of paint. That's the biggest challenge for landscape painters. In a lot of Park's paintings, the sky and clouds are prominently displayed in the piece. He has developed a sort of system to accomplish his vibrant landscapes. He works in plein air, creating tiny studies for color correctness. A photograph will never show the true colors of a scene, he said. Darks will go gray and the sky will go white because the contrast between the darks and the lights, the camera can't get the color correct. He does reference photographs for the composition of a scene. He has studied under professional artists including James Boren, Ted Geschner, William Earl Ovanes, Berberian, Clyde Aspavig, and Matt Smith and Scott Christensen. The exhibit at the museum isn't just landscape paintings either. When visitors walk in, they will be greeted with a lovely portrait of Minda, his wife, done in 1962. Minda has been supportive of Park's artistic pursuits over the years. He has worked very hard at art, she said. He had a day job for many years and would come home at night to paint because he just loved it so much. Parks added that Minda was very understanding about his preoccupation, and Minda said she tried to pick up some of the slack by taking care of the yard and running a lot of the errands so he would have his time to paint. She added that it has been exciting to see how his painting has progressed over the years. The couple has also created a children's book called Beside That Windmill, which will be published through Texas Tech University Press. Minda wrote the book and Don illustrated the book. It will be published this July. Museum of the Southwest curator Matthew Ward said he decided to include Minda's portrait for a special reason. I felt like this early painting of Minda shows his two loves, his wife and painting, Ward said. It is an example of his early work and the earliest piece included in the show. It starts the journey that he would then go on. There are also cases filled with Park's color studies and equipment, which provides an educational behind-the-scenes aspect. Ward said he was drawn to the work of Impressionist painters. If you paint every leaf on a tree or every blade of grass on the ground, people can look at it for 6 minutes and think the detail is great, but all the answers are there, and they quit looking at it, Park said. The Impressionistic style let people's mind fill in the leaves and details, and it is a lot more interesting. The exhibit takes the viewer through Park's life, starting with a painting of the farm he grew up on, a rendering of the type of gas station where he worked at growing up, and a look into the type of small towns Parks grew up in, and the viewer is then transported to his grand landscape works. The show also displays the original Boomtown painting, which was blown up into a mural for the Petroleum Museum. In his studio, he keeps a mirror about 10 to 15 feet behind him so he can turn around to view the piece he is working on and see his mistakes. He said looking in the mirror helps him figure out what is exaggerated in a painting and fix it. He added that some pieces just paint themselves, but he can spend more than 3 weeks on a certain piece. When you stare at one for 6 to 8 hours, several days in a row, you don't see anything wrong with it, he said. I put them in a frame and look at them for a few days to figure out the flaws, then take them out of the frame to fix it. Over the years, he has enjoyed visiting the museum because of its Southwest collection. For last year's Septemberfest, Parks was the featured artist. He said he hadn't attended Septemberfest as an artist since the early 90s, but was honored when the museum approached him about participating. He said he never dreamed that he would have an exhibit at the Museum of the Southwest. Matt called and asked if I would be interested in having a retrospective show, Park said. I said, man, yeah, I would. So we started discussing the show from there.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 21st, 2022. Community Calendar. Ballpark Brews. Want to taste different beers on a ballpark field? The Rockhounds have you covered. Sample regional and national beers on the field while enjoying the sights and sounds of the ballpark, according to the Rockhounds website. Gates will open at 5:45 p.m. Saturday at Momentum Bank Ballpark for the first Ballpark Brews event. Beer will be poured from 6 to 9 p.m. Enjoy dozens of quality beers while hanging out on the professional playing surface. Food will be available from food truck vendors, and concession stands will be offered for those who want a true ballpark experience. Upon entry, guests will receive a custom 5-ounce tasting glass, 15 tasting tickets, and a 21 and up wristband. The field will have stations offering samples of beer, including Tall City Brewing Company and Eccentric Brewing Company beers. Designated driver tickets are also available and include complimentary non-alcoholic fountain drinks all night and choice of hot dog or hamburger from the stadium concession stand. Advance tickets are $35, day of tickets are $45, and designated driver tickets are $15. Tickets can be purchased at https://www.milb.com/Midland/events/ballpark brews. Sibley's Spring Festival. Sibley Nature Center will host a spring festival at the end of April with plenty to do for families. The event will be from 9 a.m. to noon, April 30th, throughout the trails of Sibley Nature Center. The Texas Camel Corps will bring a camel to the festival. The Texas Camel Corps was established to educate the public about the historic use of camels in America in the 19th century. The festival will also feature Mrs. Motzi and Greeny the Clown, hands-on activities from the Arts Council of Midland, a puppeteer, an Earth Day activity, a bee demonstration, Rusty the Cowboy singing at the fire pit, a petting zoo, and a bookmobile. Shipley Donuts will donate donuts and kolaches. Higher Grounds Coffee Shop will donate coffee, and there will be a hot dog vendor at the festival. The I-20 Wildlife Preserve, Keep Midland Beautiful, Camera Club, Gem and Mineral Society, Midland Historical Museum, Texas Master Gardeners, and Texas Master Naturalist will be on site. City of Midland Career Fair. The City of Midland Administration Services Department will host a career fair April 26th. The career fair will be from 3 to 6 p.m. at the MLK Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. There will be multiple City of Midland departments offering on-site interviews and job offers. Resumes and references are encouraged, but not required. Computers will be available to help with online applications if candidates do not fill one out beforehand. Events. 9th Annual Bustin' for Badges Clay Shoot Fundraiser, Thursday and Friday at Windwalker Farms Sporting Clays. Playtime at the Playa, 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the I-20 Wildlife Preserve. Casey Donahue and Jana Kramer, 7:30 p.m. Thursday at Chaparral Center. Golf for the Green, 7:30 a.m. Friday at Nueva Vista Golf Course. MCT's Birthday Party, 11 a.m. Friday at Midland Community Theater. Gala at the Gardens, 5:30 p.m. Friday at Cafe at the Gardens. Downtown Art Tour, 6 p.m. Friday at the Odessa Marriott. Taste of the Permian Basin, 6:30 p.m. Friday at the Horseshoe Pavilion. Jerry Hart and Flatland, 7 p.m. Friday at the Destination Midland. The Bachelor Live on Stage Official Tour, 7:30 p.m. Friday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Share Autism Walk, 8:30 a.m. Saturday at Grande Communications Stadium. MGMS Outdoor Market, 9 a.m. Saturday at 602 South Main. Earth Day, 10 a.m. Saturday at the West Texas Food Bank. Record Day with Endless Horizons and Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 10 a.m. Saturday at Endless Horizons. Where the Wild Things Run 5K Beer Run, 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Saturday at the Sibley Nature Center. Boss Babe Market, noon to 6 p.m. Saturday at Tall City Brewing Company. Dos Amigos Junior Rodeo, 5 p.m. Saturday at Dos Amigos. Sunny Soseda y Todo Eso, 7 p.m. Saturdays at the Destination Midland. The Midland Community Band's Spring Concert, 7 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner and Brown Auditorium in the Allison Fine Arts Building on the Midland College campus. Rain, A Tribute to the Beatles, Broadway in the Basin, 7:30 p.m. Sunday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Meet and Greet with George P. Bush, 11:30 a.m. April 25th at the Petroleum Club of Midland. Local Entrepreneur Meetup, 5:30 p.m. Monday at the Beer Garden. Songs at Sibley, 6 p.m. Tuesday at the Sibley Nature Center. BPW April Business Meeting, 11:30 a.m. April 27th at the Sibley Nature Center. Blue the Basin, 5:30 p.m. April 27th at Museum of the Southwest. Martha McBride, 7 p.m. April 28th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Pop-up shopping party, April 29th and 30th at West Texas Food Bank. Art Against Assault, 7 p.m. April 29th at Cactus House. Northside Lions Club 29th Annual We Serve Breakfast, 7 to 10 a.m. April 30th at the Midland Park Mall. Sibley Spring Festival, 9 a.m. April 30th at Sibley Nature Center. West Texas Shopping Expo April Show, 10 a.m. April 30th at Fiddlesticks Farms. Third Annual Crawfish Boil and Bash Competition, April 30th at the Destination Midland. Family Fair, 2 p.m. April 30th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish. Shanda Pierce, 7 p.m. April 30th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Piano Forte by West Texas Winds, 7:30 p.m. April 30th at Midland College. Theater Gears Up for Play. Noises Off, 7:30 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays from April 22nd through May 7th. For tickets, go to www.mctmidland.org or call 432-570-4111. Cast: Dottie, Liz Kenniger, Lloyd, Andy Salcido, Belinda, Pam Keel, Brooke, Samantha Spencer, understudy to Brooke, Melanie Collins, Freddie, Kevin Loeffler, Gary, Ben Spencer, understudy to Gary, Solomon Jordan, Tim, Hiram Flores, Selsden, Carl Beery Moore, Poppy, Samantha Leal. Country singer to hold free concert. Texas country music singer Casey Donahue will perform a free concert Thursday at the Schaap Center at Midland College. His 2019 album, One Light Town, debuted at number 2 on the Billboard Country Album Sales chart. He released his newest album in March, titled Built Different. During the last 18 years, Donahue has risen from a favorite on the local Texas music scene to a nationally touring act, consistently selling out venues across the country, according to a news release. Jana Kramer will be opening for Donahue. Kramer is known for her role as Alex Dupre on One Tree Hill. She began her music career in 2012 and has released 2 albums, Jana Kramer and 31. The albums featured 7 charted singles on Hot Country Songs and Country Airplay, including top 10 hits Why You Wanna and I Got the Boy. She competed on season 23 of Dancing with the Stars, finishing in 4th place. The concert is presented by the Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series. It will begin at 7:30 p.m. at the LG Langford Chaparral Center. Tickets are not required for general admission seating. Preferred seats are available for Friends of the Series and Midland College Distinguished Donors. Contact staff in the Midland College Foundation office, 432-685-4526, for more information about these opportunities.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, April 21st. Grace Viola Burfiend, age 74, of Midland, passed away on April 13th peacefully at her home. Grace was born December 4th, 1947, in New Haven, Connecticut, the only daughter of the late Lila Mack and William Adams. Grace graduated from Burgess High School in El Paso in 1965 and went on to attend the University of Texas, El Paso for 2 years. She married Billy Burfiend on February 9, 1969, in El Paso. She worked for Commercial Bank of Midland as a secretary from 1977 until 1981, when she was injured in a serious car accident. Grace is survived by her daughter and honorary son-in-law, Amber Burfiend, and David Steinberg of Pearland, Texas, her son and daughter-in-law, Mark and Kendra Burfiend of Castle Rock, Colorado, her former husband, Billy Burfiend of Porter, Texas, as well as grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Grace was preceded in death by her parents, Lila Mack Adams and William Adams, Jr. A viewing will be held on Friday, April 22nd from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. The service will be held Saturday, April 23rd at 10 a.m. at Christ Church in Midland. Following the service, the burial will take place at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating in Grace's name to the Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center. Hattie Marie McPherson, age 78, of Midland, passed away on April 13th. Visitation will take place on Friday, April 22nd, from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be on Saturday, April 23rd at 11 a.m. at Macedonia Baptist Church. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Jeffrey Todd Murray of Midland died April 13th in Midland. No arrangements are scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Kiefer Patrick Gears of Odessa died on April 13th in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Matthew Calvin Martindale of Gardendale died April 14th in Midland. Full funeral, followed by burial, will be held on April 21st at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Sherry Lynn Harkness of Odessa died on April 15th in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at American Heritage Funeral Home at 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 21st. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, April 21st, 2022. Former teacher gets probation. A former teacher at Odessa Collegiate Academy will spend the next 10 years on probation after pleading guilty Wednesday to having an improper relationship with a 17-year-old student and possessing nude pictures of her. Ector County District Court records detail William Hikes Boone, 52, was indicted in September 2020 on two counts of sexual assault and two counts of improper relationship between an educator and a student. The indictment details Boone had sexual contact with the girl during the first 3 months of 2020. Court records show he was also charged last month with possessing, in January 2020, photos of the same girl engaged in sexual conduct. On Tuesday, Boone pleaded guilty to the child pornography charge and the two improper relationship charges in the 70th District Court of Ector County. Judge Dan Wallen sentenced Boone to 10 years probation on each of the three counts on recommendation of Assistant Ector County District Attorney Courtney Williams, who said the victim had been notified of the plea agreement and had no objections. The judge also ordered Boone to register as a sex offender. Should Boone violate his probation, he could face up to 10 years in prison on each count. According to Ector County Independent School District police documents, Boone was arrested after two former OCA students told the school's principal they had suspicions, and the 17-year-old later acknowledged sex acts had taken place at the school months prior to her graduating. Odessa Police Department's Crime Scene Unit found forensic evidence in Boone's classroom as well, the ECISD document stated. Chamber, Discover Odessa, team up for podcast. One mundane response locals and new residents express when describing activities in Odessa is, "There's nothing to do." That's the myth the City Chamber of Commerce and Discover Odessa are trying to debunk with the help of a new podcast they plan to release in early May. Allison Gray and Ashley Flores, who are marketing and communications specialists at the Chamber of Commerce and Discover Odessa, respectively, have started the Discover Odessa podcast presented by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce and are quickly two episodes into recording before their May 3rd release on Spotify. Each new episode is set to come out every other Tuesday. The two have already interviewed the Chamber of Commerce's president and CEO, Renee Earls, director of Discover Odessa, Monica Schenner, chamber director of operations, Lynn Van Amberg, and director of economic development, Tom Mansky. to set an introduction for the first episode and inform listeners to what the Chamber of Commerce actually does. The second episode features Director of Marketing for the West Texas Food Bank, Craig Stoker, and Director of Odessa Arts, Randy Hamm. Within the second episode, Gray and Flores delve more into the purpose of the podcast by giving their listeners an inside look at unique stories, fun facts, things to do, business advice, and much more from the locals that shape Odessa. We really wanted to spearhead the myth that Odessa has nothing to do, while also highlighting the unique pieces that Odessa brings that not many people maybe see or have heard of, Gray said. Gray said she believes their audience is anybody who's recently moved here to Odessa, but also people who have been here for a while and are just trying to find things to do. Gray goes on to say the podcast won't be closed off to interaction from listeners either. We hope to make it a thing where listeners can also ask and find out more information through the podcast. Gray and Flores plan to take questions from listeners over social media before each new episode. The idea for the podcast originally grew from the need to get more information on the Chamber's audience, with both Gray and Flores brainstorming for avenues before settling on the digital program. When it came time to pitch the idea, the Chamber ate it up. They were like, yes, green light, go and do it. Very supportive, Gray said. And they were very excited that this is a new piece for the Chamber to be able to help get more information out there with. Flores added, they loved it. Hammond Stoker said they believe in the podcast as a new approach to engage locals as well. It's just for us another marketing tool to be able to get the word out about what's going on, and I really applaud the Chamber for taking this initiative because there's never such thing as too much marketing, Ham said. Stoker added, anyway, to get the word out, let's do it. The duo's third podcast will feature the owners of two local businesses, Paige Hackett, the owner of To the Moon Juice Company, and Alejandro Barrientos, celebrity chef and owner of Curbside Bistro. Interested listeners can find out more information and submit questions for future guests on the Odessa Chamber of Commerce and Discovery Odessa Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Odessa Chamber and at Discover Odessa. Projects could more than double local tax base. A regular board meeting of the Ector County Independent School District trustees on Tuesday evening was full of lawyers and contractors seeking agreements with the board under the state's 313 tax code, which allows districts to agree to appraised value limitations on qualified projects. More than an hour of presentations ended with board members clapping and declaring their excitement about the possibility that new projects could help the bottom line of ECISD and bring billions into the local economy. The board learned the agreements were win-wins for both school districts and industry, allowing qualified businesses to save tax costs during the first years of the agreements, but also a win for districts to grow and diversify the tax base. A number of projects wowed the board with values in the hundreds of millions, but some indicated values in the billions for projects that mostly indicated they would be developed in the Pinwheel area. In all unanimous votes, the board agreed to accept a series of six applications for appraised value limitations on qualified property under the Texas Economic Development Act, Texas Tax Code, Chapter 313, from 0.5 PI LLC for direct air capture builds 1 through 6. Representatives from the group detailed that the project could be upward of $24 billion if all six builds are done in Texas. The group seeks the 131 in advance of making a decision on where they would build. The board was told that each of the six builds could mean 100 or more permanent jobs and thousands of construction jobs during the building phase. Construction would start in 2029, and officials said they pull carbon dioxide out of the air to sequester and to do other things with, like for use in downhole or sell to an industrial off-taker. The permanent jobs could move some employees out of more traditional Permian Basin jobs and make good use of the skilled labor force here, officials detailed. Board members were told if all six were located in Ector County, there is a possibility it could more than double the current tax base. The board also unanimously accepted another 313 for D.G. Pinwell North, LLC, which is a $180 million solar project that will support Nacero. Another 313 was also unanimously accepted for Ophelia Solar. The facility is a general solar that would sell power and is a $150 million project. Construction would be 12 to 18 months with 200 jobs, and once in operation would have two or three jobs. GCC Permian LLC's 313 was also unanimously approved. The group is a cement facility. The board also accepted a presentation of United Way of Odessa awards to ECISD for raising more than $77,000 this year. A number of students were also recognized for a variety of achievements, from All-State Football to the Bronco Spirit and Mojo Spirit Scholarship Awards.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.